House Committee on Revenue for March 9, 2017 will come to order. Colleagues, today we are holding public hearings on a number of bills that are either directly or indirectly related to nicotine, tobacco taxes, and a variety of similar issues. So we're going to open a public hearing on all the bills on our agenda today: House Bill 2037, House Bill 2056, House Bill 2062, House Bill 2084, House Bill 2119, and House Bill 2662. Kyle, give us a quick one. Members, please.
Okay, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For convenience purposes, in the meeting materials, not under the bills, but under the meeting date, we did put together a table that lists the bills and the impacts upon the cigarette tax, other tobacco taxes, and vapor, if applicable. So you can reference that for all the bills that are listed for public hearing today. House Bill 2084 is slightly different. It's not about taxing rates or anything like that. Won't go into that right now because I know we have members in front of us. But for your reference, that's the table that's up there. And both myself and Christine works on Christine, who covers the vapor, can answer any questions or get into specifics. But I think for a quick overview, that's you have it in front of you.
Great. Thank you. I know you're all busy today, so I think whoever needs to get to committee first should go first. That may be. Sorry?
I'll go first, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I'm here to testify. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlick, House District 33. I'm here to testify on House Bill 2119.
Thank you. And before you begin, let me just ask that everyone, if possible, be as brief as you can. If you've heard the statement argument before, simply say, I agree with so-and-so about X, and go on. We're going to limit time for people because we have way more people than I'm going to be able to get in for long speeches in the hour and 45 minutes we're allowed. Please, Representative Greenlee, go ahead.
My statement shorter than what you just said. Let's see if we do it that way.
Good.
I'm here to testify on House Bill 2119. There are two major purposes in my mind to a cigarette tax, and House Bill 2119 would increase the tax by $2 a pack on cigarettes. One purpose is to raise revenue. The other purpose is to get people to quit smoking, or more precisely, to avoid taking up smoking in the first place. Essentially, nicotine is more addictive than heroin, and nicotine addiction is harder to treat than heroin. Two things about that are clear. One is that adolescents are very price sensitive, and the higher the price of cigarettes, the less likely they are to initiate smoking behavior. The second thing is, if you haven't started smoking before you're 21, you're very unlikely to become addicted to cigarettes. So this bill would serve as a deterrent to adolescents beginning smoking. It would also raise revenue, and I have a -1 amendment that would dedicate the whole revenue of the additional $2 a pack into the modernization of public health. Our public health system is essentially non-functioning in many of the counties of this state, and we've been involved in a 4-year process to create a modernization process for public health. We fund public health. We're 48th in the country in funding our public health system. And when we're faced with situations like a Measure 9 earthquake on the coast would essentially wipe out one bridge on every road between the coast and the valley, the public health departments in the coast would be dealing with cholera and a variety of things they have no ability to deal with. We estimate we need about $100 million a year over time to fund the modernization of public health. We have a plan for modernizing it, but we don't have the funds. This bill would produce something over $100 million a year for the modernization of public health, and it would be. It wouldn't affect the way current taxes are distributed. It would only relate to the additional tax that would come from the $2. Great bill. I hope you pass it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My colleagues have been kind enough to let me go next, since I have to testify on my own bills that direction. Next. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the reference record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senate District 17. And I'm here supporting officially Senate Bill 20, House Bill 2662, which raises the price by $1.60 a pack. That being said, I will make it clear to the committee that I will support as high a tax increase as you're willing to send me when it comes to tobacco. For all the reasons that my good colleague to my left, with whom I've worked on public health issues for well over two decades now, mentioned. But in addition, I would point out to this committee that smoking and the related diseases cost every Oregon household $1,600 per year, whether anybody in your family smokes or not, because of the costs of health insurance, of Medicaid, of lost workplace productivity, of lower graduation rates that are all related to tobacco use. And so anything that increases the price of these dangerous, addictive substances will decrease their utilization while still maintaining revenue, and I'm happy to provide this committee with an article documenting that fact should you request it, Mr. Chair. So as my colleague said, increasing the prices decreases purchase, and according to the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, every 10% increase in cigarette prices reduces youth smoking by about 7% and total cigarette consumption by about 4%. We've made great progress in the state. We've decreased the pack per capita per year consumption of cigarettes in the state by almost 50% over the past 20 years, but it's not good enough when people in the state per capita, man, woman, and child, are smoking 50 packs of cigarettes per year, and we know that only 20% of our population smokes. That tells you something about how many packs a year most Oregonians are smoking. So we want to reduce that number to protect people from the adverse effects. The increased prices in 2662 would go toward benefiting the Oregon Health Plan at 86 cents, an additional 86 cents per pack, General Fund at 22 cents per pack, Mental Health at 14 cents per pack, Tobacco Use Reduction Account at 3 cents per pack, and cities, counties, and elderly transportation, an additional 2 cents per pack. So it would benefit a wide range of issues, and I'm going to let Representative Kenny Geyer fill you in on more details. But as a family physician, as somebody who cares deeply about leaving the state healthier than I found it when I took office, I urge your support for raising the tobacco tax to a level that actually has a significant impact on smoking rates in the state while still generating much-needed revenue. Thank you, and I hope you'll forgive me for going next door to testify another bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian, you don't have to rush off.
I have committee too, but I'm not sad that I'm missing it. Don't tell them.
You're on the record, Dr.
Not yet, he's not.
I'm fine. Yeah, for the record, I'm Alyssa Kenny Geyer from.
You're supposed to be in early childhood.
That's right. So I'm Brian Clem. I represent District 21, where you're sitting now, City of Salem. And I do have a bill here, but I will not comment on all of it and just say something similar to Senator Steiner Hayward, that I would be supportive of any bills that raise tobacco taxes. In particular, I would argue that it should be raised up to the point where it's no longer a subsidy by everybody else onto cigarette smokers. And there's always studies about what that figure is and how much that everybody else is contributing to somebody else's I wouldn't call it a choice because it's an addictive product to their addiction, I guess would be the better word. But just to put a technical lens on here, I think the bill that I've got originally was designed to be at the state of Washington's level. I think that's now out of date. Theirs has gone up a little bit more. Ours hasn't, so it's short of that. And in this case, it's distributed to CCOs to be used for preventative services in particular. And I know Representative Greenlicks is about the public health system in general. That might be one of the uses allowed in his. I'm fine with these general type of uses that are aimed at health. And I can just tell you on a personal level, and I'm sure you'll hear other stories, it's not the money. It's we would like people often to quit smoking. My daughter never met her grandfather. He died of lung cancer. I never met one of my grandfathers. He died of lung cancer. I got to meet my grandmother once. She never smoked at all and died from his smoking of lung cancer. The one I did meet, he died of lung cancer and asked me to get his gun so he could shoot himself. Mm. I chose not to do that. That's four out of the six people in my family all died from a preventable disease, and that's several generations who never even met their own grandparent due to smoking.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rep. Brian Clem. Alyssa Kennegeyer from House District 46. Thank you for allowing me to speak on this. I believe I'm a co-sponsor on 2062. There's a lot of different bills out there, and I think a lot of what my colleagues have said, I do want to just reiterate how important this tobacco tax is, both in deterring people from starting to smoke, in helping people who are smokers, incentivizing them to stop smoking, and in putting some of those funds into prevention, cessation, and treatment programs. So I have great respect for my colleague to the left, but I do think given some of the feedback that we heard from the tobacco tax that lost at the ballot several years ago, that it is really critical that we tie the revenue that we get from a cigarette tax or a tobacco tax back into programs that can help prevent people. If we're going to say we're going to raise the tax, but we know that this disproportionately impacts communities that disproportionately smoke, and those are low-income communities, people with mental health and addictions, LGBT, and communities of color. It's really important that we make sure that we have programs out there that help prevent and also help intervene and help with the cessation. And I actually think from the hearing that we had, it was either 2 or 4 years ago, I had a new idea after talking to this committee when Representative Bentz talked about his secretary and how hard it might be after decades of smoking to stop, and should she be taxed to help prevent other people. And I thought another reasonable use of this could actually be helping the CCOs pay for some of the asthma, emphysema, and lung cancer care. So there's a piece of kind of you're paying your own insurance if you are going to be smoking. So I have a lot of statistics here. Because there are a lot of people behind me, I'm not going to go through all them. I will submit them for the record just in terms of what it costs, how many people would like to quit but have a hard time doing that, what it is per direct medical costs, what the indirect costs are, how much it is per pack, where we stand in the state. There are a number of states that are quite a bit higher than us. 17 have cigarette taxes above $2 per pack or more, and 8 of these, including Washington, are above $3 a pack. I would agree with Representative Clem that we should peg it as close to Washington as possible. I wouldn't go higher than that because we don't want to send people over the Columbia River, but bringing it up to $3.02, which is what Washington's is, would make a lot of sense. And I will note that many states also allow cities to tax on top of their state tax, and that has resulted in a $6.16 tax in Chicago, Illinois. In New York State, it's $5.85 a pack, and they found that after doing that, smoking dropped significantly. So I have 4 pages of notes, but I will spare you and submit it to OLIS. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. That's great. And of the 3 who are left, are there questions for this panel? I expect to hear a lot more technical stuff from other people. We have a lot of people to hear from. Representative Bentz, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. Do you anticipate as the cannabis market matures and we don't have to worry about the black market issues that we would see similar tax increases suggested for similar reasons? Or is there some substantial difference between the two inhalants that would warrant treating cannabis differently?
I will speak for myself, Representative Bentz, and say that I would, once we make sure that people are legitimate and not on the black market, I think that we should tax it at a higher amount and make sure that those revenues go into prevention programs and treatment programs as needed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Bentz. I'm not sure in the case of edibles that you could draw the same nexus between a public health cost due to carcinogens in the smoke, but I don't support the legalization of marijuana, and I know I lost on that, but I don't really think I would tax it too until it's not really very useful for people to do. They should go do something else with their time besides smoke marijuana, in my mind.
Thank you.
I had another hand. I'm not sure. Was it Representative? No? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Back to your other committees. Appreciate your testimony today. I have a lot of people to hear from. So please be as brief as you can. And if you have something to submit, if you have something you've written out, please submit it in writing, and then summarize what you are planning to testify. The committee members will be reviewing the written testimony that comes in, and of course it will become part of the public record. Katie Thiessen, Morgan Cowling, Joe Basler, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, members of the House Revenue Committee. My name is Morgan Cowling, and I'm the Executive Director of the Coalition of Local Health Officials. And I have the pleasure of working for all 34 health departments that work to prevent the spread of disease and locally run tobacco prevention and education programs and are working to pass smoke-free policies and also enforce the Indoor Clean Air Act. So this is an issue that is very important to my members. We're here to support increasing the tobacco tax and tax on inhalant and vapor products. And we know, and I'm going to be not repeat what's already been said, but we know that deaths associated with tobacco use are still the leading cause of death in Oregon. And Oregon needs to do more to support those who want to quit and prevent youth from starting. And we know that you have a range of options in different policy bills. The taxes, we know, are some of the most effective. And so we really appreciate you taking a hard look at these bills this session. We'd recommend raising the tobacco tax to at least $2. We're less concerned with how much revenue it brings in, but want to do as much as we can to really drive the price high enough to prevent the next generation of youth from starting. While you're considering this, we would also like you to consider the e-cigarette vapor product. We've seen increase in youth use of those products as well, and we want to take what we've learned from traditional cigarettes and use that with the e-cigarette products as well. And so that will mean not an increase, but enacting a tax on a product that isn't currently taxed. So again, we'd like to encourage you to discuss at least $2 a pack in a tax, enacting a tax on vapor products. And we'd like to see no less than 10% go to prevention and public health. And we absolutely appreciate the work and the work of Representative Greenlick in particular to talk about dedicating those funds to public health and public health modernization. Many of the activities in public health and updating our public health system are associated with more preventative activities, and appreciate the conversation that he started with that amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, please.
Katie Thiessen with the Oregon Nurses Association. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, thanks for giving me the opportunity to submit testimony on behalf of our nearly 15,000 members across Oregon. As many of you know, ONA nurses work in a variety of health settings, from large health clinics to local public health, corrections, school-based health centers. So across the board, nurses really understand and see the adverse impacts of smoking, tobacco, and nicotine use on Oregonians. As we know, the state ultimately has over $1 billion in lost productivity due to premature tobacco-related deaths in Oregon. So from heart disease, diabetes, asthma, cancer, the risks of using tobacco and nicotine are clear. And the most effective way that we can really target particularly youth from starting to use tobacco and nicotine and start smoking is really through raising the price. So just to briefly echo what Morgan said here, we also support increasing the cigarette tax by at least $2 a pack and devoting that additional revenue to the Oregon Health Plan, health funds, and at least 10% to public health prevention programs. On e-cigarettes in particular, we support the World Health Organization's recommendation to regulate e-cigarettes the same way that traditional cigarettes are regulated, particularly considering that these products are still not free of potentially harmful chemicals, including carcinogens and heavy metals. And as Morgan said, e-cigarettes in particular are increasingly becoming popular with youths who are very price sensitive. So any conversation about raising the tobacco tax should also certainly include establishing an e-cigarette tax for these products.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Joe Basler. I work for Oregon AFSCME. I just wanted to add, I think our support to Representative Greenlick's idea of funding public health. Right now, such a small portion of the cigarette taxes go to local governments, and local governments are preempted from raising revenue on so many different levels, including cigarettes. So local governments right now can't raise their own cigarette tax. And so if we are going to increase it, which we would love, $2 sounds the right number to me, having most of it much dedicated to local governments who have to deal with a lot of the outcomes of cigarette use seems really important, and not just sort of keeping the current formula. So not a lot to add, and you're short of time, so that's all I've got.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you. We very much appreciate your testimony. Next, I'm going to call the people who've indicated they're more than 100 miles from home. Tim Churchill, April Fisher, Erica Friend, please. I want to make sure we get you in so you don't have to come back in case we have to hold the meeting over. And again, if the first two of the last panel said virtually the same things, if you want to testify on those topics, please do so only if you disagree with them.
Go ahead. My name is Tim Churchill from Medford, Oregon. Chair Barnhart and committee, thank you for the time to speak in front of you today. We are opposed. I work for EC Blend, who is an e-liquid manufacturer there in Medford, and we are opposed to the House Bill 2062, which is has the 95% tax, I believe, in that. This would absolutely kill our industry. That's a very large number. It's a very young industry, the vaping industry, and very highly competitive, with a large portion of that being online. So there's a huge number of internet sales, and that type of tax would drive most of the Oregon sales to the internet, and I don't think you guys would see much revenue from that at all. Plus, it would kill thousands of jobs in Oregon from the e-liquid manufacturers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
I'm April Fisher. I own two stores in Southern Oregon. I disagree with the speakers before as far as that e-cigarettes should actually be included as a tobacco product. We are not a tobacco product. For myself and my husband, we were, he was a smoker for 40 years, I was a smoker for 25 years. This was the only device that was able to get us to get off of smoking. The patches didn't work, none of it worked. We are now 4 years cigarette free. And with the electronic cigarette, the nicotine level is actually able to be reduced. So to say that nicotine by itself is as addictive as heroin, I believe to be false, because it's the other chemicals included that are combusted that actually create the addiction. Nicotine actually allows the people to curb that addiction, to be able to say, okay, I can get off of all of these other chemicals, and then you lower your nicotine level. I am now zero nicotine, you know, and a lot of people start talking about the teenagers, and the teenagers are going out and they're getting into the devices. Do you realize that most of these teenagers are using zero nicotine? They're not using any nicotine in the flavors. The kids that come in 18, because we've never sold to anybody 18 under the age of 18. That was just a rule for us, regardless. They were non-smokers when they came in. They wanted to be able to hang out with their friends that were doing hookah, which is, you know, I mean, it was a huge mess. They wanted to be able to do the same thing, zero nicotine. In fact, I flat out refused to give them nicotine and educated them about the fact that you're not going to get that head rush that you do with the cigarette. So I was able to educate, and I'm continuing to able to educate. And with a tax that puts all of our stores out of business, you've taken a tobacco cessation device. Ultimately, it's a tobacco cessation device, because we are able to get people off of cigarettes. We are able to, we have customers coming in all the time having, you know, upper respiratory issues and telling us about how that they are no longer taking 5 out of the 7 medications because they're no longer a cigarette smoker and they are a vapor, and the vapor is allowing them, as, you know, older adults, to be able to continue to stay off of the cigarettes. I'm against the tax. I believe it would be a complete killer of our industry, number one. Number two, I think it would then put everybody back onto cigarettes.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Erica Friend from Essence Emporium. Chair Barnhart, the members of the committee, thank you for your time today. Having used vaping product to stop smoking, started my business 4 years ago. 2062 would ultimately put me out of business, along with, I expect, many other vape businesses in Oregon, which would reduce the revenue you may expect to see from it. Again, as said, pushing that market to the internet, as well as overseas sources where those things cannot be collected. We encourage you to go against this measure.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. Could you tell me what price we could put on your product that wouldn't force sales to the internet?
I honestly don't have a number. Plenty of our sales go to the internet already because they don't have the same overhead, and so that it's competitive there to add that wholesale tax, especially in those numbers, is not feasible for us.
Other questions? Thank you very much, and thank you for the long trip to come and advise the committee. We appreciate that. Christopher Friend, James Barta. Where's my other one? I want to ask one more, and I've lost track of another doctor here. Erica Mosenson, please. Please go ahead.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is James Barta. I'm the Legislative Director for Children First for Oregon, and we have a program United for Kids. And so in the interest of making Oregon a better place for children, we support cigarette tax, but especially I want to speak to the e-cigarette tax. And I realize we have a room full of anecdotes around us about the effects will be on, you know, both pro and against this. But I just want to go back to the research, which I'm sure you will not remember the numbers as well as you remember the anecdotes, but nonetheless, it should carry more weight because 11th graders in the state are increasing their use of e-cigarettes threefold in the last 3 years. The survey by the CDC of youth showed that e-cigarette youth users are twice as likely to smoke a cigarette. And finally, these youth that then start smoking, they're actually less likely to quit using e-cigarettes and if they're not. And that's what the Public Health Authority put in one of their memorandums. And it was from a study of a meta-analysis of more than 20 different studies, most with control groups. And that's what the data shows. And so one other item, too, is I know there'll be concerns about this new revenue being regressive. It is a concern that a lot of the poorest families would be affected, but it's time to break the addiction, and we have to start with this next generation of children. So I would appreciate support of some form of taxation on all these products.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Chair Barnhart, Vice Chair Bence, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christopher Friend. I'm the Oregon Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, or ACS-CAN. As a reminder, ACS-CAN is the advocacy affiliate of the American Cancer Society, and we're dedicated to eradicating cancer as a major health illness through evidence-based policies. That's what's important, evidence-based policies. For ACS-CAN, tobacco control is both a matter of health and financial burden on every Oregonian. For all devices that contain nicotine, Here in Oregon, it costs the state about $3 billion in lost productivity and healthcare costs. That translates, again, I'm underlining this, to about $1,600 for every family in Oregon, regardless if they smoke or not. This is a subject that's personal to me. Over the past 5 years, I saw my grandfather slowly succumb to a tobacco-related death, and in October, I watched him pass away. This is something that's deeply personal to me, and I am in front of you today asking you to increase Oregon's tobacco tax by $2 a pack for cigarettes and a similar rate for other tobacco products, as well as e-cigarettes. I submitted a tobacco tax projection based on the American Cancer Society, the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids to OLIS. Please reference this document. In the first year, a $2 tobacco tax increase is projected to bring in $144.56 million in new revenue, of which ACS CAN and our other public health partners would like to see 10% of that revenue dedicated to tobacco education and reduction, with the remaining revenue dedicated to healthcare expenditures. ACS CAN also supports excising a tax on e-cigarettes because, contrary to what you may hear in anecdotal mention today, they are not completely safe alternatives to combustible tobacco cigarettes. And additionally, a recent report in January by the University of California San Francisco concludes that e-cigarettes are not an effective cessation product. In fact, e-cigarette users are 28% less likely to quit using tobacco than those who do not use e-cigarettes at all. ACS CAN also supports a significant tax on e-cigarettes because in a separate report from the University of California, San Francisco indicates that e-cigarettes attract traditionally low-risk teenagers who might not otherwise smoke tobacco products. Imposing a similar tax on e-cigarettes is another evidence-based practice which will reduce youth access to e-cigarettes, which, again, are not harmless. Finally, ACS CAN supports raising the tobacco tax by $2 because it would bring it in parity with our neighbors in Washington and California. In the long term, it'll save our state $1.1 billion in projected and healthcare cost savings, again, over the long term. And raising tobacco tax by $2 is a significant investment in reducing the economic and health burden on every Oregonian. Again, when you're considering a $2 tax increase, I ask that you consider my grandfather's life. I think that a $2 tax increase, again, is an evidence-based practice to make sure that young people don't pick up the habit and won't affect Oregon families like mine. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Hello, my name is Erica Moseson. I am a pulmonary and critical care medicine physician and on the executive committee of Oregon Thoracic Society. This year it struck our group that there was a lot of legislation in this session that really impacted our patients. So that kind of prompted us to actually come to meet you all, so thank you. I share all the concerns that everyone has already raised about, you know, the $1.5 billion a year we're spending. Of the 5,500 Oregonians every year that die of tobacco-related lung illness, I take care of a lot of them. I take care of them in the clinic when they're struggling, some of them choosing between inhalers and food, and always regretting their tobacco addiction that is also sucking a lot of money out of the family pocket every month. And then I take care of them when they're dying in the ICU, like your grandfather. Like the 50-year-old mother of four that I held sobbing while I found out that she had stage four lung cancer, and she got addicted when she was 15. So the economics of this are sick. I think people are shocked when we hear that it's $1,600 for every Oregonian for someone smoking. It's not shocking to me the more I practice pulmonary medicine. It is $500 a month out-of-pocket list price for an Advair inhaler. A Spiriva inhaler runs $300 to $400 on the list price. You throw in an albuterol inhaler, that's another $60. Sure, it's like 50 to 75% of that is probably what we pay. Of course, we don't know because we can't get any transparency on drug pricing, but we're running from $500 to $900 a month. That's $5,700 to $11,500 a year for an average three-drug regimen for someone with COPD or asthma. We get these kids started when they're a teenager, and they're an asthmatic that's with us for life. So if we can even get them from two maintenance inhalers to one maintenance inhaler, from any maintenance inhaler to just a PRN inhaler, by getting their parents to stop smoking, by getting them to stop smoking, that's another ton of money a month, right? Even if it's just out of the family's pocket, we're just looking at their copays, anywhere from $40 for just the, you know, albuterol inhaler to $100 a month, that's $100 they're going to spend at the grocery store. That's $100 they're going to spend taking their kid on a trip. And that's just more money that's going to go into the economy and into a healthy economy. So, I mean, if you also just look at for private businesses, because, you know, looking at my own insurance premium that comes out of my paycheck every month, and I'm like, wait a minute, you know, I don't smoke. What is this? Your workers who smoke are more admitted to the hospital, 124 versus 76 per 1,000 days. They have longer hospital stays, almost 7 days versus 5 days. They got 6 more visits for healthcare compared to non-smoking workers. Tobacco is the biggest variable in lost production time for businesses. It is more than alcohol consumption. It is more than family emergencies. It is more than age. It is more than education. If you smoke more than a pack a day, you have 75% higher lost time to productivity. And this is real Oregon businesses, right? Like, everyone's still struggling to recover, especially across the state. We've got some areas that are picking up, but we've got to get everybody back into the economy, right? And so we also see that secondhand smoke costs the U.S. economy around $10 billion a year, and every employee who smokes costs $5,800 more than a non-smoker to U.S. private employers. So I think a lot of the times we get swept up in, oh, there's all these confounders when we're looking at the Oregon Health Plan or Care Oregon. Oh, there's all these confounders with Medicare. But I'm talking about working adults with a regular private employer job are costing their employer $5,800 more. And this is, my heart breaks for my patients, right? Most people have tried to quit smoking in the last year. Most people are in my office begging for help to stop. Okay? And I had some hope for e-cigarettes. I agree with you, the data has not panned out the way that we would hope, but I'm still always trying to help them quit smoking. And if you look at this and do the math, I honestly think $2 a pack is a low ball. If you just take $5,800 more for a U.S. private employer, divide it by a pack a day habit, we're looking at $16 a pack. So $2, fine, whatever. We don't want people, you know, getting an illegal black tobacco market. I'm not a policy person. I take care of people every day who are dying of this disease. And I don't know that we want to send the money anywhere but tobacco cessation. Like, I don't want people addicted to tobacco. I don't want governments addicted to tobacco taxing, right? I want no one to cry at night if that tobacco revenue goes to $0, right? Because that's what I want. I want a tobacco-free Oregon. Anyway, okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Stay right there for just a moment. Sorry. Let's see if there are any questions for this panel. May I say, many people come to this committee with many issues. We very much appreciate the passion. Thank you.
I worked a night shift last night, so I'm a little disinhibited.
So we're cutting into your sleep time.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Sleep in the car.
Don't sleep in the car.
You're not driving.
Yeah. It looks like Chris Gerard from Plaid Pantry, Justin Rainey, and Jana Jarvis, please.
Sure. Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Justin Rainey. I'm here today on behalf of Reynolds American. Reynolds American is one of the largest cigarette manufacturers in the United States. We also manufacture other tobacco products, including chewing tobacco, as well as vapor products. We're here today in opposition to the taxes before you that raise the tax from 50 cents to the bills that raise it up to $2. And we're also opposed to establishing new taxes around electronic cigarettes as proposed in House Bill 2062. This afternoon, I want to make three brief points on the cigarette tax, and then I want to talk a little bit about the e-cigarette tax. The first point is there's little evidence that actually supports the claims that increasing the tax on cigarettes reduces the adult smoking rate. In 2013, after Oregon passed the 13-cent increase, the growth at which it declined slowed down from 2.3% to 2.2%. National trends since 1994 also indicate the same, that there's not a strong correlation between increases in pricing to reduction of smoking. The second point I want to put on the record is increasing the tobacco tax is not going to bring revenue that's needed to solve Oregon's current budget situation. Smokers are going to look for alternative and cheaper alternatives, such as going across the border to Idaho, where the tax is 57 cents. Others might go to Nevada, where it's 80 cents. Some may switch to a product that's not as expensive as the product or the brand that they were using. I think that as a result of a tax, we would lose significant amount of revenue in sales from Washington. Right now, I think it's roughly a quarter of the people who purchase cigarettes in Oregon purchase that from across the border. So you'd see a significant decline in revenue. And, you know, tobacco revenue projections that we have traditionally have been off. In 2015 alone, Oregon collected 31% less than they had initially projected. Since 2009, 70% of all U.S. Cigarette state tax increases failed to reach the revenue projections. Increasing the state cigarette tax unfairly targets low-income Oregonians, many of which who make less than $25,000 a year. Tobacco products are in Oregon, they're taxed heavily at both the state level but also at the federal level. Right now you pay roughly $2.32 in tax for a pack of cigarettes. That's roughly 49% of the cost of the overall pack. A 50-cent tax increase would force a smoker to pay an additional $114 a year. $1.50 would force the average smoker to pay an additional $342 a year, and a $2 tax would be roughly $456. Smokers pay a higher percentage of tax than's paid on other products. For example, the tax on one carton of cigarettes is equivalent to 42 gallons of gas. And those who smoke, roughly 57% of all smokers make under $25,000 a year. So this is really the poorest of the poor that would be looking to balance the budget on. I want to transition a little bit to the electronic cigarettes and our opposition for establishing a new tax.
And please try to wrap up if you could, so sure. We can get to other people. Thank
okay.
you.
You know, currently, if we were to increase this tax, there would be 95% of wholesale. Oregon would become the most expensive tax on the market for electronic cigarettes, joining Minnesota. North Carolina, Louisiana, Kansas, West Virginia use a much lower model. And I think to Rep. Buehler's question, a lot of it's the market-based in terms of the rate. You know, if other states don't have taxes, you know, Oregon businesses would lose a lot of revenue or close if they had to pay that additional rate that's much higher than the states in and around them. So we would be willing to have conversations around an approach similar to North Carolina. I'll close with some comments that were made by Tom Miller, who's the longest serving attorney general from Iowa, when he talked about some of the youth usage data that's been used. And he makes two real key points. And he's a fierce anti-tobacco advocate. The youth usage of vapor, they say is roughly 13.4% of minors have used the product, but about 1.3% use the product daily. 0.8% have used e-cigarettes 20 to 29 days of the 30. And of those 13% that use vapor products, only about half of them had actually purchased the product. So it was more peer pressure, trying something, but there doesn't seem to be an indication that many of them are smoking at long periods in a long time. The other point that he makes in his comments is that despite the use of vapor products by minors, cigarette smoking among young people is at a record low, which strongly indicates that vaping is not a gateway to smoking. So with that, I'll wrap up my comments.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. Can I finish the panel?
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you. Please.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, co-chairs, members. I'm Chris Gerard, CEO of Plaid Pantry and chair of the Oregon Neighborhood Store Association. Excuse me. I submitted a written testimony. I think it's pretty straightforward. I won't address that.
Thank you.
In the interest of time. But I would like to talk about and it's not in my written testimony, there are a lot of cost numbers thrown around about tobacco use and some very large numbers, and I decided I wanted to understand how that works. So I got one of the frequently referenced books called The Price of Smoking. This is advocate strongly for increasing tobacco taxes just as much as you possibly can. And digging into it, all of these types of studies come up with hypothetical quality of life, mortality type estimates and everything. And in fact, this is the book, this is the one that calls for $40 cost per pack of cigarettes. It was the highest one, but it's actually the most documented one. You can actually follow through the numbers. And what I found was that of the $40 claimed, $38.50 is borne or is attributed to the tobacco user and their family. So what they call external costs in this study, and this is the study is from Duke University and the University of South Carolina. There's actually $1.50 in external costs, and the undocumented handout that you just received is from me. It talks about the $1.50 external costs. Of the external costs, there are more hypothetical costs on, we hear about productivity and sick pay and costs for life insurance and things like that in the $1.50. But we don't collect tobacco excise taxes in Oregon to pay out money to private companies or life insurance purchasers. So they go further down. On the second line, you'll see that the medical care costs not borne by the smoker, 49 cents a pack. But this number includes the entire health care system, private insurance, patient copays, Medicare, Medicaid. And we don't collect tobacco excise taxes in Oregon to pay money to private corporations, insurance companies, or citizens for personal health care expenditures. Medicaid, which is our Oregon health plan, is 17% of total health care spending. So the 49 cents would equate to about 2 cents per pack of cigarettes to fund the claim cost of tobacco use. However, the federal government pays 75% of Medicare, or 6 cents a pack, ostensibly from the dollar and 6 tenths of a cent that they collect federal tax. So that leaves 2 cents per pack extra cost to the Oregon health plan to be covered by tobacco taxes. And as you know, we currently collect $1.32. Tobacco users, therefore, are significantly subsidizing not only medical expenses of non-tobacco users, but all the other programs that receive tobacco money. Current level of taxes, certainly any increase, cannot be justified on medical system expenses. Clearly, we're taxing tobacco users mostly for the revenue, for use for other purposes, and we're doing it because it's an easy population to tax. But the fact that we can do it doesn't make it fair. I urge you not to increase taxes on already overtaxed citizens who have no political power. If revenue is needed, please share the burden fairly, including reductions in the rate of growth of state expenses. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Jana Jarvis, president of the Oregon Trucking Associations. I am not here to speak about nicotine taxes or any of that. I'm here in opposition with House Bill 2084, which seeks to create a new liability for common carriers. I wanted, if you take a look at that bill, it describes that the Department of Revenue would create a list of essentially bad players and then create joint liability for carriers that would pick up from this list. And I wanted to inform you that the federal government addressed this issue with the PACT Act in 2009, and that is the Prevent All Cigarette Trafficking Act. And it essentially removed that liability from common carriers for tobacco products, and we had sent that information to legislative revenue prior to this bill being drafted, but I just wanted to put that on the record. But as a practical matter, I wanted to just let you know that primarily these products that get shipped are shipped with UPS or FedEx or the United States Postal Service. And obviously you have no jurisdiction over them. But if you think about UPS or FedEx, they are worldwide. And so the possibility of training millions of employees worldwide to something that would be Oregon specific is virtually impossible. And so that probably was the reason for this discussion at the federal level, but I just wanted to bring that up to your attention today.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? I think there were a couple at least. Representative Nose?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, one of you said the tax doesn't discourage smoking among adults, okay, but then if it doesn't do that, why did you assert then that the revenues go down if the price goes up? That didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, Chair Barnhart, Representative Nose. I think the point that I was trying to make is, you know, people who smoke, they're not going to stop smoking. They're going to go to look for other sources. So here in Oregon, individuals would look to maybe cross states such as Idaho or Nevada and go and purchase a cheaper product there. In Oregon, because we have a much lower state than tax than what Washington has, many people from Washington come into Oregon and purchase the product. So we would be losing that revenue, so we wouldn't be realizing the revenue that we would anticipate.
Okay. Well, that gives me a food for thought about how we set it.
Great. Was there another one? Representative Hernandez, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chair, actually. I have more of a statement than a question, and it was to touch on what Representative Nose was talking about. Doesn't reduce the rate of adult smokers, but there's plenty of evidence and research to show that it does reduce it for youth and younger folks. And I have my own personal experience with that as a former educator and seeing how prices, the cost of cigarettes and cost of things does prevent them from being able to afford it. Another note, I think, remind me your name, if you don't mind.
Sure. Justin Rainey here on behalf of Reynolds American.
On another note, you mentioned Mr. Reynolds. Is that right?
Sorry, Justin Rainey.
Rainey.
Yeah.
Mr. Rainey. You mentioned that the tax is regressive. And in my own understanding is that most of those folks who smoke are low-income and disproportionately people of color, and these are the folks who are being who also don't have access to health care and are being disproportionately impacted by these health impacts, and therefore not only cost us more money as well, but if we were to dedicate this tax to public health, we could offset those negative impacts that occur to these communities. So the argument that it's regressive doesn't appeal to me, because using these monies to negatively offset it through public health programs that will get them healthier invalidates that argument for me.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't hear a question.
There was no question. I said,
did you want to respond to
statement?
Okay, thank you. I'd ask committee members to hold statements until later so we can get as many of the witnesses in as possible. Representative Marsh, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank
I did.
You.
For the gentleman from the Plaid Pantry, I'm sorry, I forgot to. I didn't.
Yes, Chris Gerard.
So you gave us some interesting analyses about external costs of smoking, but I'm assuming your interest in this is primarily as a businessman who is selling cigarettes. Is that correct?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Marsh, my interest, of course, we sell cigarettes. It's a big part of our business. But we sell a lot of other things to the customer who uses tobacco. And our concern is that when you raise the price, it's going to push more people, as is going on in Washington, into smuggling. So we get, really, it's worse for us to lose the complementary sales that go with tobacco than it is to lose the tobacco sales, because tobacco is low margin, but the candy bar is a good margin. So it's overall sales, and at the large increases here, it will force more people into the black market. You can see it in Washington. Half the people in Washington buy bootleg cigarettes, a third of it from Oregon. So that's our concern, and the fairness issue, the fairness issue of taxing people that are already paying a whole lot of tax. 20% of the population is paying a lot more than others. So that's our main concern, ma'am.
So you would say that selling cigarettes is good for business?
Pardon me?
So selling cigarettes is good for business?
Well, tobacco is a legal product, and we're in the business of supplying to our customers who use that product. So that is a third of our business.
Thank you very much. Appreciate very much your testimony. It's come to my attention that we have another person who's come more than 100 miles to testify today. That's Jason Weber, so we'll take Jason next. Is there anyone else who's signed up to testify who's come from more than 100 miles from home, so I can be sure to call them up at the same time? All right, then I'll go ahead and call on Matt. I'm sorry, I'm going to massacre the name. It looks like Select Vapor retailers. And Allie Stubert, please. Matt, is it Manao or Manao? Something like that?
Sorry.
Oh, he's coming. Okay. Please, and if you, to the extent you can, please follow my admonition, because we still have a number of other people to hear from. Thank you. Mr. Weber.
Chair Barnhart, Vice Chair Warner, and members of the committee. My name is Jason Weber. I own Big Crusaders in Roseburg, Oregon, and I've been speaking at these hearings on behalf
of. If you'd move the mic just a little further away from you,
sorry.
it won't distort quite as much.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
I've been attending and speaking at these hearings for about over a year now. In the prior hearings, I always wished I could go last or speak again because of the false statements that I hear from the opposing side. I would like to quickly touch on a couple of those, and I promise I'll explain how that is relevant to the tax. One thing you will most likely hear or already have heard is nicotine causes cancer. This is a false statement. When nicotine is in the form of a cigarette wrapped in 4,000 chemicals like ammonia, cyanide, arsenic, and carbon monoxide, as well as tar, just to name a few, yes, it absolutely does cause cancer. However, when nicotine is by itself or with ingredients like vegetable glycerin or propylene glycol, it's just a stimulant, no more dangerous than caffeine, not even in the same league as heroin. Another popular misconception is vaping is a gateway to smoking. Vaping has a 70% success rate for helping folks quit. So if by that you mean a couple people fail at it, that statement would be true. Sometimes folks don't have the proper setup or aren't ready to quit smoking. But never in my 6 years of vaping or 3 years of running a business have I met or heard of someone who has never smoked a day in their life but decided to vape for fun and then went to being a smoker. It just doesn't happen, and there's no credible study to show that. Vaping is not smoking. Vapor is not tobacco. Vaping is proven by the Royal College of Physicians to be at least 95 to 97% safer than combustible tobacco. These are the same people that were screaming that cigarettes kill before everybody could admit that or actually the light was shined on the truth. Secondhand smoke kills 53,800 people a year. Secondhand vapor is non-toxic. That's a study from the CDC. We have dozens of other legitimate studies, but the opposition keeps saying that we don't have any legitimate studies, and I just don't understand that. And they keep saying that, basically that's what I'm hearing over and over again, when we have more studies and they seem to have one study, that's not even a study, it's more of a survey from kids. Yes, smoking is the leading preventable cause of death in America. It kills over 480,000 people a year, and I say leading preventable death. The most success we've ever had with preventing cigarettes is vaping. Vaping is the thing that's working the most. That's what's preventing people from quitting. There's 10 million of us in America who have quit smoking by use of a vaporizer. It's killed no one, and studies show it never will. To tax this life-saving technology makes no sense. We shouldn't be fulfilling our revenue budget deficit by harming an industry that's doing such good work, amazing work. On top of that, 95%. A few other states implemented taxes at half that number, and it shut the majority of businesses down. They received no money. If a big tax like this passes here in Oregon, I will have no choice but to shut my doors. And all the money that you guys already get from my regular taxes that I paid to the state will either go online or out of state, including 7 full-time jobs that will be lost that my business provides. If this is truly about people's health and not about making money, I urge you to say no to these taxes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Representative Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Matt Minahan. I represent select retailers and manufacturers of the vaping industry. I'm going to be very brief today. I want to touch base on the bills that deal with the 95% wholesale tax. Our position is a 95% is too high of a burden for these stores to handle. I did hand in to OLIS a fact sheet from the Vapor Technology Association. I won't touch on it unless I'll only touch on the third point, which highlights what happened in Pennsylvania that who implemented a 40% tax. over 100 stores closed, you know, before the tax was even implemented. I strongly feel we would have the same result here in Oregon. Another concern we have on the tax is slowing the transition from a smoker to vaping. You know, the higher the price it is, the less of an incentive they have to choose vaping. And of course, we feel vaping is a safer option than traditional cigarettes. Another point I would like to make is the bill's dealing with lumping vaping in the definition of tobacco. You know, tobacco is a very extensive tax section or tax law that's been developed over 30 some odd years. And lumping us into that, I think we would strongly oppose, because we think there would be a lot of unintended consequences, and we'd be dealing with a lot of carve-outs, things that don't apply to us. So we would say, if you do tax us, we would like to be taxed as a separate kind of tax code and separate definition. You know, we would certainly think that would be easier to build on and less messy. I do want to answer a question from before, Chair Barnhart, if I could, from Representative Bueller about what we could live with. The clients that I represent could live with, say, you know, up to a 10% wholesale tax. And we'd probably still lose some stores, but I think that's something that we could weather. I did do a proposal or work out a budget, and on the state's model, that would raise about $5 million for the state from the state's budget. So I just wanted to answer that question. I'd be more than happy to take any questions that you have.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Allie. I own an e-liquid company here in Oregon. I'm against House Bill 2062. 95% tax is absolutely outrageous. It would shut my company down for sure. There's over 250 vape shops in the state of Oregon. That does not include all of the e-liquid manufacturers. I've talked to over 100 of those shops. They would shut their doors. What would happen is the people that work for those shops will go on unemployment, they'll go on Oregon health plan, they'll get on food stamps. You'll be making no money. Everybody will turn to the internet. And it's just, it's, you know, the Royal College of Physicians, as he said, proved that it's 95% safer. Nobody here ever said vaping was safe. But it is absolutely safer than smoking a regular tobacco cigarette. Sorry, I'm a little nervous here. Often we hear from these bills that it's about the kids, and I'm a little confused about that, because just last year, $357.9 million was received from tobacco taxes, including the Master Settlement Agreement. Only $9.8 million of that was used for harm reduction. Also, when you hear that more teens are smoking, if you look at the CDC website, it clearly states that they added in teens that were up to the age of 25 and added people who had taken one puff off of an e-cigarette into that. That doesn't make a vapor. That does not make a vapor. As far as the person who said heroin and nicotine is more addictive than heroin, I have a 21-year-old son on the street right now who quit smoking by vaping, but he's out there dying because he can't quit the heroin. So do not, I don't ever, that makes me sick. It is not even close. Nicotine has never caused cancer. Vaping is the only thing that worked for any of us in this room. And you want to shut down 250 shops and hundreds of e-liquids of companies for a 95% tax. It's so counterproductive. And I'm very passionate about this because my son will die. My 5-year-old daughter did die. You know why? Because you're more worried about this and taxing this than people who walk into a bar and drink and then drive away drunk. Why don't you tax that? Leave us alone. We haven't killed anybody. Tax is good, but can we all work together on a tax that works so I don't lose another child? Please.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Very sorry for your loss. Thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dorian Pemble Belkin. It looks like Cam Delaney. And Joseph Gilpatrick, please.
Which item to start on, does it matter? I'll get going. Hello, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Cameron DeCaney. I am the general manager of 82nd Avenue Tobacco and Pipe. We are a cigar and pipe retailer in Portland, Oregon. The focus that I would like to drive on my testimony here is most specifically, and I would like to just, you know, for the record note, my dissent against House Bills 2662, 2037, 2056, and 2084. I don't know. That one I'm a little bit neutral on. I think it would be pretty okay if we could keep sales from the Internet coming into the state, because that's probably our biggest competitor. Regarding that specifically, House Bill 2662, which removes the caps, the cap of 50 cents per cigar on cigars, is the primary issue that my industry would face. Cigar sales are over 40% of our total business, and the reason why we maintain those sales is because we can remain competitive with our cigar cap against Internet sales. If you take one box of cigars, for example, Padron 2000, very common cigar. If you go online, you can buy it easily for about $150. I can sell it in the store for $175. That box costs, they pay about $13 in taxes. So that consumer who's looking at paying a shipping to get that box to their house, they're just fine coming down to our shop and buying it from us. If you take that cap off at 65%, that same box of cigars, I would have to retail for $230. They're not coming in the store anymore. You bump that up to 82.5 or 81%, whatever the specific is, 81.25. Now it's $245. Now we're almost $100 per box more expensive than the Internet. And who's going to come into our store after that? It is absolutely devastating. The cigar cap is what makes cigar retailers, premium cigar retailers in Oregon, viable businesses. We have been in business for about 25 years. There are about 10 employees there. It's a simple, small mom-and-pop industry. Most of the cigar retailers, I hope we hear from some more of them today. I know they're here.
They're on the list.
They are mostly very small businesses, one shop, maybe two shops. And even our little tiny business between, and we don't do a lot of cigarette sales, we're mostly cigars and pipe tobaccos. Our little tiny business generated last year something in the area of $130,000 in tobacco tax revenue. And if this cap is lifted, which is our biggest threat, and we're not there, that money's not there. Two more points I'd like to just touch on real quickly, and then I'll be done. Number one, I want to be very clear to everybody that pipe tobacco and premium cigars are not cigarettes, and the health issues associated with those and the youth use associated with those need to be absolutely separated. If you look at, this is a graph taken from the FDA Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act, which sets the overall harm score, which integrates a whole lot of variables, sets the harm score for cigarettes at around 100. On that same point scale, small cigars is next at 67. Pipe tobacco then is just over 20, and premium cigars is at 15. So the health risks are non-comparable. So I'd like to just in your mind separate those types of tobaccos and the impacts and the usage as well. The last thing that I would like to really, really, I cannot express this enough. These tax increase bills always include floor taxes, which is to say you have me count what I have in my shop, and you make me pay the difference between the old tax rate, which I have already paid, and the new tax rate on stuff that I have already done. It is the most draconian provision in any of these tax bills, because you're basically changing the goalposts. You're telling me,
we're changing the law today. What you did yesterday was illegal, so now we're going to put you in jail. I've paid those taxes. The product is mine, and I can sell it to the consumers. If you're going to raise the tax rates, raise the tax rates. Start it on a date, and let me keep the stuff that I've already paid for. And
thank you, thank you very much. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. My name is Joseph Gilpatrick. I'm an Oregon e-liquid manufacturer, also a shop owner. I've been a vapor now for relatively 4 years. I was a 22-year cigarette smoker and had a very hard time trying to quit. Now I use vapor products with very low, I'm trying to work down to zero, but a 3-milligram dose of nicotine right now, which is relatively like a super ultra light, minus the tar and all the carcinogens, you know. I'm here today basically to say that these taxes are unjust for vapor products, simply because they are not tobacco. They are nicotine. From a manufacturer standpoint, I purchased my nicotine from a company in Oregon, or excuse me, in California called Nude Nick. They are the same supplier for a lot of the patches and the gums and the lozenges, which are not under any scrutiny right now whatsoever to be taxed. So, you know, essentially we're taxing, you know, the way that I choose to consume this nicotine, not the nicotine itself, because the other devices and products that I know are FDA approved, however. But as you said, nicotine is addictive, and so we should do a broad spectrum on things. So as a non-smoker, you know, who has fought with this, that has opened a vapor shop, that has dedicated my life to help people quit smoking cigarettes, believing that this is a much, much safer alternative, at least 95%. I find it rather appalling because, you know, every day there's customers in my store that have had told me things of my doctor realizes that I've been heavily smoking for the last two pregnancies, and I now at this point switched to use a vapor product. My oxygen level is completely different, and my doctor had told me to continue vaping rather than the alternatives in which she had gone in the past. There's gentlemen that have COPD with 70% oxygen, which are now coming in claiming to have over 90% oxygen. You know, these are hearsay things, you know, but I assure you, if you look to, you know, a lot of these public venues, the American Vaping Association, there's testimony after testimony, hundreds of thousands of people. Actually, 42% of American cigarette smokers are now vapers, 42%. And so that's a huge number, and we don't want to stop the decline of cigarette use. Of cigarette sale. We want to stop cigarettes. We don't want to decline vaping because it's stopping cigarettes. It's a much safer, more viable alternative. If this was here when my grandfather smoked two packs a day and died at the age of 60, or my father who died at the age of 66 who smoked two packs a day, or my mom who's on oxygen right now, who still smokes two packs a day, and I've been trying to do everything in my life to help other people quit smoking with these products. And if you would do the research, and I brought you credible evidence as well, and I submitted them as well.
Great, thank you.
But also, the vapor industry right now in Oregon, that young lady said 250 shops. I created a revenue report conservatively of 180 vape shops. I took my revenue, and I multiplied it by that, and it shows and reflects that right now through our taxes, we give over $5.7 million of revenue yearly to the state of Oregon. And that doesn't include our employees adding another, you know, chunk of that, which is close to $1.7 million. So I urge you to take a look at that relatively. You know, we are not tobacco. We are nicotine. We're a different industry. We need to be looked at as a different industry. And so please take a look at the evidence, the scientific evidence, and I urge you not to lump us in with tobacco, because we're not the same products. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
My name is Dorian Pemble-Belkin. Thank you for having me. I want to start off, I'm a disabled child in the state of Oregon. I'm on Social Security. I am moments away from potentially putting in my ticket to work to release my flavor that I got out before August 8th. With this tax that's potentially happening, I'm going to have to go back to Social Security. I'm not going to be able to do what I wanted to. I had plans of being able to donate 50% of all of my sales from every bottle to the children's hospital local that I used to attend. But now, with this tax, I'm going to be pushed back onto Social Security. All this stuff that's happening, I am not prepared for stuff like this. I am permanently disabled. I shouldn't be even working, but I'm trying to. I found something that I am passionate about and I believe in, and I've seen what good it's done for my friends and what it's done for people around me. And just to see what's happening in the United States pushing against this, and even in our state, Oregon, it's blowing me away, because I thought I was in something to help people and to get people away from cigarettes, which now it's feeling like they're pushing us back into cigarettes, and we're making these are cigarette products or tobacco products, which in my eyes and most people that even manufacture this know there's no tobacco in 90% of these products on the market. There's very few companies that even use nicotine that's derived from tobacco. So to call us a tobacco product is just, it doesn't make sense to me. And I'm still, it just blows me away that they're trying to end something that could be stopping cancer of cigarette smokers and getting people away from smoking, but they're still trying to push this back to smoking, because pushing these taxes isn't going to save people from buying it local or wanting to quit. It's going to push them to the internet, buying from Russia, doing the things people used to do to dodge taxes and buying cigarettes. They're not going to do it like, oh, I'm just going to quit because now my taxes are high. They're going to do it somewhere else. And that's why probably these statistics of showing that, oh, cigarette smokers have gone down in said states that do these taxes, it shows that because probably people are just not buying them in that state. They're buying them from another state. So how are they able to track that these people quit?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions for this panel? Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Barnhart. Can you explain why exactly cigars' health and implications and negative effects are so much less than cigarettes?
Well, I couldn't cite, and I'll submit this graph.
Thank you. That would be very helpful if we could get it in the record.
And it has listed what some of the metrics are. But would it be
satisfactory to look at the graph with the metrics already in it, Representative? Thank you.
Yes.
Other questions for this panel? Representative Hernandez, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This may be a naive question, but does nicotine cause lung cancer?
No, it does not. Nicotine, actually in its raw form, is used as a pesticide on organic vegetables. It's also, nicotine is in every root-bearing vegetable as a defense mechanism to keep it off, keep bugs off of it, essentially. Nicotine is, we're actually encountered it every single day. It's a stimulant, much like caffeine. And it does not cause cancer. It's the tar, the carcinogens, the combustion of a cigarette that causes cancer. That's why there's no cancer warning on the gum, the patch, the lozenges, and all these other really great aids to help people quit smoking cigarettes. The only difference is we're not approved by the FDA, which owns Chantix and the lozenger and the gum. So therefore, you know, we're not recognized as a smoking cessation, even though they're a 5% increase of, you know, success, and we are, I think it's a 65%. Success rate.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up question?
I did have a follow-up.
Yes, please.
And you just mentioned that the FDA doesn't regulate it, so there's no testing done by the FDA to tell the consequences of.
I think we should save that for the medical experts. I think it's a great question. But
currently, our products are actually registered through the FDA. And to answer your question, all of our ingredients.
It's okay. I'll wait for the medical experts. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions for this panel? We very much appreciate your testimony. You brought up some new information, and we'll hope the next panel can also bring up some new information. It looks like Ed Ryan, perhaps, Portland PDX Cigars, Tim O'Dell, and Brenton, Broadway Cigar Company. I'm not going to get the last name right. Gentlemen, and if you would confine yourself to the parts that haven't already been eloquently described by your competitor over here, that would be helpful.
Chairman Barnhart and the committee, thank you so much for hearing us out today. Cam is definitely a competitor, but he's actually a dear friend of mine. One of the best things about the cigar industry is
And
that
I'm sorry, did you state your name?
I'm so sorry. My name is Brenton Ahina.
That's why I missed it. Thank you.
Everyone does, not a problem. I am the general manager of Broadway Cigar. We're based out of Portland, Oregon. We currently have 3 locations, and we employ 12 people. Over the last 8 years, the company has provided about $50,000 plus in taxes, all of which would be wiped out. Unlike my friend Cam, we do not do 40% of our income in cigars. We do 100% of our income in cigars. And by removal of that cap, we will go under. He's already provided the numbers and the difference in price differentiation. We are already at war with online retailers. Those retailers all reside in Florida and Pennsylvania, where there is zero tobacco tax, and they are able to sell at a much lower price. That 50% cap that we fought 4 years ago keeps us barely competitive as is. And I can't, you know, further stress that there is a need to differentiate. I can't speak to cigarette statistics. I can't speak to vape at all. I don't do either of those. I am a cigar enthusiast and cigar connoisseur, and I pay all of my bills every day, every month, on the sale of tobacco. The cigar itself is a completely different concept, and we'll leave it at that. Everyone can debate back and forth on the actual legitimacy of that, but I don't have people taking 15-minute cigar breaks to stop productivity. Cigars are a choice that you make to take an hour away from the rest of your day to sit and socialize with people like-minded and people making the same choice as you. I do want to touch real quickly on House Bill 2084. That would be also incredibly difficult for my company in that we only now have UPS to ship our tobacco from Miami. All of our cigars come essentially out of Miami, if not Reno, a couple other places. But that also touches on them, not just people buying from the internet and trying to get small packages in, but FedEx dropped out about 2 years ago from shipping tobacco, and all of my companies concentrated into UPS. If UPS drops out because of complexities and not wanting to deal with it, we are all hurting for supply, which then just leads to loss of sale, which means that people are going to go straight to online anyways. The other thing I want to touch on, which I'm glad that there's been a transparency in the motive behind taxation. The taxation is for preventative smoking, or to prevent smoking in general. While I understand that the ideal of a smoke-free Oregon will never happen, in the sense that even if tomorrow you pass these bills and my company goes out of business, I'm just going to go online and order my cigars and still enjoy my cigar in my backyard. A smoke-free Oregon is a choice-free Oregon, and it's not an Oregon I would really be proud of. I was raised on the pride of our country's ability to choose what we'd like to do, and we do bend and break to specific regulations. Our smoking lounges have to be freestanding. Completely agree with that. Things of that nature that are completely reasonable, right. I get.
And if you could wrap up, please, that would
absolutely
be helpful.
I would just want to basically plead everyone here. I know most people up there are not smokers, and they're not pro-tobacco. But cigars specifically, in my industry and my living, my bills are paid by this, and it's a wonderful hobby full of wonderful people that have no malintent.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
My name is Tim O'Dell. I have Tim's Great Cigars in Wood Village, Oregon. I hope you'll excuse my nervousness and the breakfast burrito that's on my shirt right there. My points that I brought today were covered by this gentleman and Cam over there. In the interest of time, I don't know what else to tell you other than to stress the fact that the cap, if we're not left alone, would endanger some jobs, close some businesses, and I'm one of those businesses. You know, that's how I pay my bills. I don't want to get caught in the prop wash of cigarettes and vaping. I mean, I don't mean to malign them or whatever. You know, everybody makes their living as they have to. I sell premium cigars. I sell premium pipe tobaccos, and to a discerning clientele. And if we could leave the cap right where it is, I think it would be beneficial for the state coffers in that way.
Thank you very much. That is a great example of how to testify in this committee. Thank you.
Don't say anything.
My name is Ed Ryan. I'm an independent contractor who represents a variety of different premium cigar and pipe tobacco manufacturers. All these guys are friends and customers of mine, and they've done a great job of of explaining our position on this issue. The biggest thing is just maintaining that cap. If the interest is increasing revenue, I'd propose lowering the cap to 25 cents instead of 50 cents. We saw in 2004 when that cap was put in place, it was an immediate increase of $1.2 million in revenue. That model has been used for now, I think, 11 states in the country that have all used the Oregon model and have all seen increased revenue. Skipping ahead. If we're on the topic of increasing revenue, I'd even propose adding a cap on pipe tobacco. Right now it's 65% with no cap. The average price of pipe tobacco in Oregon is $5.99. You go online, that same ounce of 1Q from Lane is $1.80. And so it's a big difference. So I think if we were able to install or implement a cap on pipe tobacco, it would also increase revenue and make Oregon competitive and add jobs and tax revenue across the board.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you, gentlemen. Very much appreciate your testimony. Is Ann Scott still here? I would call Ann Scott if she's here. Stacy Michelson. And Karen Gerard, please. And I guess Dr. Scott may have left. So how about Christine Bodemir?
Great. Chair Barnhart, Vice Chair Smith-Warner, members of the committee. Thank you so much for your time today. For the record, my name is Stacy Michelson. I'm here on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties. I'll keep this fairly brief, but broadly, AOC is in support of an increase in the tobacco tax. We'd like to see at least a minimum or no less than $1.50 per pack. This is based on sort of general public health research that bears out a certain threshold that has the biggest impact on youth use. That's sort of the age group that, for us, we really want to target when it comes to tobacco taxes, and we know that there's sort of the least price elasticity among that age group. So I would echo previous comments that, you know, as much as you can get, but that's sort of our threshold of what we would like to see at a minimum. Similarly, in terms of targeting the youth population, we're in support of taxing e-cigarettes and vape pens. As others have said, we've seen an uptick in use amongst those groups of those products. And, you know, we think that there should be we should have a tax structure that doesn't create an incentive for youth to use those products over, you know, other tobacco products that they may be inclined to pick up. Kids will be kids, but we'd really like to create a disincentive across the board for them. And broadly, in terms of where the funds go, we would like to advocate, whether it's modernization or into the local public health departments for tobacco cessation specifically, we would like to see any of the funds, or at least a portion of the funds for any bill that goes forward, dedicate some of that to public health. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Karen Gerard, the Health Promotion and Chronic Disease Prevention Section Manager with the Oregon Health Authority. And I'm here today to provide information on the importance of raising the price of tobacco to prevent tobacco-related diseases and addiction. As you've heard, tobacco is the leading cause of preventable death in Oregon, killing over 7,000 people each year. The tobacco use and exposure is expensive for all of us and leads to more than $2.5 billion each year in health care costs, lost productivity, and premature death. And the consequences of tobacco use include heart disease, cancer, emphysema, and low birth weight babies. And Oregon spends much more treating these conditions than it gets back in tobacco taxes. Tobacco taxes improve public health by decreasing tobacco use. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, raising the price of tobacco is the most effective proven way to reduce tobacco use, especially among youth and low-income Oregonians, who are much more price-sensitive than others. Decreasing tobacco use among youth is a priority for the Oregon Health Authority because almost 90% of adults who use tobacco started before they turned 18. Decreasing tobacco use among low-income Oregonians is also a priority for OHA to help alleviate the heavy health and economic burdens these people face and to help reduce the burden placed on the Oregon Health Plan by tobacco-related diseases. The cost of tobacco-related illness among Oregon's OHP population in 2010 was $374 million, about 9% of OHP's expenditures. Efforts to reduce tobacco use are more effective when all tobacco products are priced at similar rates. When some products are taxed or untaxed or taxed at different rates, tobacco users may turn to a lower-priced alternative rather than quit. This is made particularly evident in recent tobacco use trends among Oregon's youth. While cigarette use among youth has continually declined over the past 20 years, use of other tobacco products, especially e-cigarettes, has increased. While less than 10% of Oregon 11th graders smoke cigarettes, almost 25% use other tobacco products. And again, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, in addition to raising the price of tobacco, when a portion of tobacco tax revenue is dedicated to science-based tobacco prevention and education, it will result in an even greater reduction in tobacco use. Oregon's public health agencies have expertise and experience in designing and implementing science-based tobacco prevention and education efforts at the state and at the local level. Adult smoking rates since the beginning of Oregon's Tobacco Prevention and Education Program in 1997 have decreased from 23% to 17%, and this translates to almost 200,000 fewer adult smokers in Oregon today. The tobacco-related cancer death rate has also dropped by 22% since the start of the program, and TPEP has produced a return on investment of more than $4 saved for every $1 expended. In summary, increasing the price of tobacco and cigarettes will result in a reduction in tobacco use and future tobacco-related death and disease and help Oregon achieve our goals for healthcare transformation and public health modernization. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. My name is Christina Bodemer. I'm the Oregon Government Relations Director for the American Heart Association, and I'm here today to share my organization's support for increasing tobacco taxes and nicotine product taxes. Honestly, I'm going to keep my comments really short because all the science has already been covered. You've heard about the rates of death and how much it costs the state. I'll just mention briefly why all the advocates are standing together for a $2 increase with tax parity on other tobacco products, and that's because small increases in tax rates do not produce the significant public health benefits and cost savings that we've all been talking about today because they're easily offset by coupons, promotions, and price cuts. So that's why we're asking for that $2 increase to really make sure we manifest the change that we'd like to see. In addition, I think it's important to note the CDC only started collecting data on e-cigarettes in 2011, and that rate of current use has actually surpassed all other tobacco products overall. So we're seeing a huge great growth in use of those kind of products. And that a similar study by CDC found that 67% of current adolescent users of e-cigarettes also smoked conventional cigarettes. So one other thing to keep in mind around the marketing is Oregon is currently outspent 11-1 when compared to what we spend on prevention to what the industry spends on marketing in our state, which is why we're asking for at least a 10% dedication of this new funds to public health and tobacco prevention efforts. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Bantz.
Very short, Mr. Chair. There's a study from Columbia University that talks about the issue that was raised here earlier in a question about the not necessarily positive impact of raising the tax on cigarettes in low minority communities. They talk about New York City and say without appropriate programs to help address the real issues of poverty, all you have is people just shifting to other sources of cigarettes. I would recommend that study to you. It's 10 years old. It's July 22nd, 2007, Columbia University, Mailman School of Public Health. Cigarette taxes do reduce smoking but can lead to bootlegging. And it's much more graphically illustrated in the article. I would love to have you guys take a look at that and then email us and tell us your thoughts on whether that's too old to make any difference or whether it calls out the problems with an isolated tax increase. Don't need to answer. I would just ask for you to respond offline. Thank you.
Thank you. And yes.
In terms of just health implications, would you prefer that people smoke cigarettes,
cigars or vape?
Either.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bueller. In the tobacco prevention and education program, we prefer that no one use tobacco at all.
That wasn't the question. If someone's going to use one of those three, tell me which you would prefer in rank order.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bueller, cigarettes, combustible tobacco is certainly the most dangerous form of tobacco use.
Okay, and then next.
And using other tobacco products such as moist snuff, roll your own tobacco, and which is also, of course, combustible, is also dangerous. And we don't know about vaping yet.
You don't know. One more question?
Please, yeah.
And why are, and do you agree with the statement made earlier, and maybe you weren't here, that cigars have much lower health effects than cigarettes? And why is that?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bueller, I would have to get back to you on what the statement and respond.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, please.
Does nicotine cause cancer?
Representative Barnhart, Chair Representative Bueller, I will get back to you on that as well.
Yeah, I want to follow up on that just a little bit. We've heard a lot of claims today from those engaged in the business of selling vaping products that essentially say vaping products have helped me and other people get off of using much more dangerous things. What is the state of the science in that area today? Do we know anything more than the anecdotal statements we're hearing about the actual effect of those kinds of things as compared to continuing to smoke cigarettes?
Chair Barnhart, the science continues to evolve, and there are what we do know is that the FDA-approved medications for quitting tobacco are effective, and the FDA has not approved using e-cigarettes for that purpose. So the science continues to evolve, and there is evidence on both sides, but not enough to make a statement one way or the other at this time.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, any bill that we pass that deals with these products will have the appropriate exceptions for approved products, as the law does now. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Tricia Tillman, please. And then the last panel after Tricia will be Matt Evans and Jeremy Rigsby. You can see I ran out of odd-numbered groups that tended to agree with each other.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Barnhart and members of the Revenue Committee. My name is Tricia Tillman, and I'm the Director for Public Health for Multnomah County. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of increasing Oregon's tobacco and cigarette taxes and to implement a tax on liquid nicotine for inhalant devices. So as you've heard, tobacco remains the number one cause of preventable premature death among Oregonians. And that significantly increasing tobacco taxes will both save lives and money. Increasing the price of tobacco, as you've heard, is a proven public health strategy for reducing the number of smokers. It helps people quit and reduces the number of youth who begin using tobacco. According to the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, every 10%
Could I ask, have you submitted your testimony in writing?
Yes, I have.
You have. Could you summarize, please? I have a couple more people we'd like to hear from, and we only have a few more minutes.
I'm
be particularly interested, frankly, in your experience in the public health arena, where it appears you're one of the experts.
So I'm hoping to focus in on things. I've been scratching out parts of my testimony.
Please, go ahead.
Reduce redundancies.
All right, I'm probably taking more time than I should, trying to get you to be brief.
The piece that I didn't hear earlier was about a 10% increase in cigarette prices reduces youth smoking by about 7% and total cigarette consumption by about 4%. Additionally, according to analysis by the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, Tobacconomics, and American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, increasing the tax by $1.65 would prevent over 13,000 premature deaths and save nearly $983 million in long-term health care costs. It is critical that any increase in cigarette and tobacco tax and any tax on e-cigarette include allocation of resources for comprehensive prevention. I did hear comments about cessation, but really want to increase comprehensive prevention activities to maximize the public health benefit of increasing the prices of these products. I did want to mention on a personal note that my mother, who quit smoking about 30 years ago, was diagnosed with lung cancer 7 years ago. So just want to reiterate that while cessation is an essential strategy for tobacco or cancer prevention, comprehensive prevention is far better and far more effective.
Could you describe briefly what you mean by comprehensive prevention?
So
I think I know, but I'm not. I don't know whether the committee.
Absolutely. So in Multnomah County, specifically, our work in terms of tobacco prevention has included both policy systems and environmental changes. So we've done things like work with parks departments to prohibit smoking in parks. We don't. Have indoor smoking anymore. We don't smoke on planes anymore. So broad, comprehensive tobacco control, which denormalizes the use of tobacco products, is essential.
Is there an education component?
Absolutely.
To this process?
Absolutely. And we want to make sure that when we talk about comprehensive tobacco prevention, that it does include cessation services, but really focusing on the ways that youth are targeted, the ways your question around communities of color are targeted to initiate tobacco, the ways that low-income communities are incentivized by making tobacco products more accessible. We're also in Multnomah County working on tobacco retail licensing, making sure that we know who is selling tobacco, and making sure that we're enforcing current laws that prohibit children under 18 from accessing that. So from a education, prevention, cessation, and enforcement perspective, we really need to see additional investment across the continuum.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Thank you. We very much appreciate your testimony. Colleagues, the last two witnesses for today, if those who can stay for a few more minutes, please do. And I've already lost track of the names. Oh, I already called your names, didn't I? Please come up. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Matt Evans with Wagon Tire Consulting. I'm here today representing the Taxpayer Association of Oregon. To keep things short, since I think we're already over time, the Taxpayer Association opposes additional increases in tobacco taxes. I want to go back all the way to the beginning of this hearing to something that Representative Kenny Geyer said regarding how these dollars are spent and the defeat at the ballot box of a cigarette tax, which I think shocked pretty much everybody in the state, myself included, in part because of the state's inability to effectively manage the tobacco taxes it already receives. We got a lot of money from the Master Tobacco Settlement. What did we do? We paid down debt with it. We spent almost nothing on tobacco cessation programs. We give money to senior transportation. I'm not sure how smoking increases the need for senior transportation, but we give some tobacco tax money to it. If you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, I would take a whack at Representative Bueller's question if you think there's time.
Why don't we hear from the other gentleman?
That.
And then we'll assume that Representative Bueller asked you that question.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeremiah Rigsby. I work for Care Oregon. We're a healthcare company that provides the Medicaid program to over 215,000 Oregonians. I'm also the co-chair of the Human Services Coalition, which is a group of about 120 advocates and organizations that care about taxes and programs and healthcare and human services programs that benefit vulnerable Oregonians. HSCO has a long history of supporting increases in tobacco tax. I want to say that we wrestled with the fact that this tax is regressive and taxes a lot of low-income Oregonians, but we figured that the health outcomes of raising taxes far outweigh that flaw in the tax. I'd also note that the World Health Organization in 2016 said that you should tax and regulate tobacco in line with e-cigarettes and other types of similar inhalants because there isn't a noticeable health difference between the two. That's all I'll say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for sticking around. Other questions for this panel? And we'll start with the answer to Representative Bueller's question.
Okay, I have absolutely no medical background.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
I have only common sense to inform my opinion.
Well, in that case, I think we'll go on to other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimonies today. With that, we did get through our entire list, which astounds me, and we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2037, House Bill 2056, House Bill 2062, House Bill 2084, House Bill 2119, House Bill 2662, and the committee, see you on Monday, colleagues. The committee is adjourned.